he's right here, so. Oh, we topped it. We cold topped it.
Okay. Ready to go. Yeah.
Eight iron.
Oh, we shanked it. Oh, look at that line, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, boy, is he on his thing.
Happy New Year, legends, and welcome back to our first episode of 2023 of the Bogey Boys podcast.
Season 3, Episode 1, Collins Kapalua Catastrophe is underway.
And we will have a good rant about that. What happened to him, mate?
Well, let's just tell everyone who we are first as well.
Go on then,
you're joined here by Kevin and Mark.
If you don't know by now.
What's been going on? It's been a while. Been a minute.
It has been a minute. It's great to get back in the chair and have a chat with you, my friends. It's been an eventful winter so far, to be honest, since we've left. I've actually been playing a bit of golf and getting in the gym through the winter. I had a nice break over Christmas and ate a lot of cheese and goose
bread.
And turkey and bread and gravy potatoes. And stuff and potatoes.
Chocolate.
More cheese.
Sweets.
Yeah. Beer. More beer. Beer.
More beer.
Vodka.
Vodka. More beer.
But I've started the new year quite well, to be fair.
You've been an animal.
We're 9 days in. I haven't missed a gym session or a piece of exercise in the whole 9 days. I've played about 4 rounds of golf.
What's that, 255 to go?
Yeah.
355 to go?
355. How many days in the year? 365.
365, isn't it?
Yeah, so 366 to go.
366 to go.
How'd you have a day?
356 to go.
What's going on here? Normal service resumed.
Yeah.
Yeah, how have you been, mate?
Very good, mate. To be honest, one of my New Year's resolutions was to get off the energy drinks, off the Monsters. Like, I wasn't on them, and then they just started creeping back into
my life. They get you, don't they?
Oh, my God. I was on one. Then one wasn't enough. Two, three. I found myself 4 new flavors. Guess that. Lewis Hamilton. Rah. Dr. Monster. Dr. Energy. Oh, that's got to be good. Any of them. Monster green, yellow, brown. Give me them all. Made the Christmas tree out of them and everything. Like, it got bad. So I haven't had any for 9 days now.
How are you feeling?
I feel great.
Yeah. Doesn't take long to get off the caffeine, does it? I'm partial
well,
to
well, not off
Red
the
Bull.
Caffeine, like.
No, but I mean the energy level, drinks, yeah. Energy drink caffeine levels,
oh,
yeah.
Oh, definitely.
I'm partial to a Red Bull. I still have me one a day.
Yeah. Do you know what it is as well? It's just a lot quicker than a coffee.
Yeah.
Like, you'd have to, like, boil a kettle, wait, get the thing, get the spoon, get the milk, and it's just, like, grab, go.
Yeah.
Like, you can be drinking that while you haven't even paid for it in the shop. Like, it's so accessible, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it is. You're
so late. I'm off then, but gym, I've been to the gym once, been for a run. I had a couple of little goes in between Christmas and New Year. Played golf once. You dragged me to, invited me kindly, actually, sorry, should I say, to Southport Municipal.
Yeah.
On the 28th, was it?
20... It was, yeah, a little between Christmas and New Year. Not yeah. With the lads, yeah. Had a little
rain and wet, we got boggy, soaked. Temp yeah. Greens, municipal golf.
It was fantastic,
you know
wasn't
it? Yeah. Absolutely amazing.
Yeah. Puddles.
Speaking of not being on the Monster, the only good couple of holes I played when I cracked that Monster, made a birdie. Just should have made a birdie on the next, played the next one quite well. Oh, but
must be your new on-course drink then.
No, I've got to stay away.
Staying off them, okay.
Staying off them. Got right. To.
Fair enough.
365 to go or something.
66, wasn't it?
Yeah, oh yeah, 66, sorry. You've been playing a good bit of golf, though, haven't you?
I have, yeah. I've neglected my lessons and neglected the range. I've just been going out when the opportunity arises and playing 18 holes.
Well, what's a good thing about that from a lesson standpoint, when I was speaking to David on our little night out that we had, it's that because you've got no flow, you're not ingrained. You are ingrained from years back, but you've got no flow of like good scores, tendencies, bad shots, misses, memory. Like, you're literally starting fresh. You're having it, you've hardly hit balls. You're back on the range and you've got a few months before the season starts. So you can make a few changes and it won't be like disrupting your season or your flow or where even your pattern of where you're hitting the ball.
Yeah, the time to put it in is now, isn't it?
Yeah.
If you're going to put it in. And that's probably a good time to talk about the Appear On Academy, isn't it? That we've
1,000,000%.
Got going. Obviously, anybody who's listened to the podcast on a regular basis will know we've launched Appear On Clothing, and the launch has been quite successful, hasn't it, Kev?
The feedback's been great, and like, the sales have been brilliant as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you to everyone who's bought anything.
Yeah, we've got a new range coming at the back end of February, beginning of March for the spring, summer, ready for the new season. We've got, obviously, the stock. What we're looking to do as
we... classics.
The classics, yeah. As we've always said on this podcast, the idea of the professional route and everything that we do, it's to give people that knowledge and that that inside information that they've probably never had before. And it's with a PGA professional. It's a 6-week course. David's going to be the coach, isn't he? And once you've done this 6-week course, one, you're going to improve from week one to week six. That's pretty much one of our guarantees, isn't it? If you stick to what the coach is telling you, the proof's in the pudding with you, really, isn't it? You committed for a full 6 months. You got down from 9 to scratch. So it's obviously what Dave teaches works. It's just giving people the opportunity to go with friends, to get out, to socialise, but to learn and be able to take that information onto the course and onto the driving range. And if you know something's going wrong, at least you know why it's going wrong, or you can have a sort of an indication as to why it's wrong. And you can always go back then and see the likes of David or another coach if it's not local, and, you know, get a top up knowing where you are with your game. Whereas people who've never had lessons before and just go out and play, sometimes they're a bit lost. I know a few friends who I play with who have never had a lesson before. They've just practiced off going to the range and finding themselves, but they do feel a bit lost on the course when they're hitting bad shots or topping it off the tee all the time, and they don't really know what to do to fix it or to change it. They're looking for a hint or a tip off a better player to get them to start hitting the ball a bit better. And there's no consistency there, is it? So the Appearance Academy is going to be an academy of golfers that we'll do in different groups and provide people with that information.
Well, how many times do you see people going out, or societies or groups of people, and you see people giving lessons to the mates, or do this, or you're hitting it left, just aim right. You're hitting it right, just aim left. Like this ball's knowledge, which back. Is all the things, you're lifting your head up, all the nonsense that you hear.
Yeah.
But then the same people that are giving that advice, even the advice givers, might be the same people that are too scared to go and get a lesson on their own.
Yeah.
It's quite an intimidating thing starting any new sport. Or one thing going for a lesson is, it's a bit of an ego kick, isn't it? Because you're basically admitting that you're not as good as you think you are.
I know.
Going there, you're going to find out that you don't know half the things.
I know from my own experience that how I visualize my swing in my head and how I visualize my impact position and how I strike the ball when I strike it well is the complete opposite to what it is when I see it on that screen.
Well, even you there, you've been down to, what was your lowest, 3, what, 2?
Got down to 1, yeah.
Oh, down to 1, sorry. And then you're off 5, 6 now, decent player, played great, been to America. When you envisioned your strikes and asked David what you felt it was, your strike, and you said, what was that for you? And you said, that was an 8 or a 9. David was like, that was a 2.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, straight up, bang, that was a 2. And it was like, why? And then you got the reasons, you got the reasons behind the strike, the reasons behind the turn, all these different things. And like, to go and actually get that information on your own, it cost X amount over 6 weeks. We're just condensing it down into a group format, having fun, meet new people, and get out there and just.
And it's a buddy system as well, isn't it? It's a buddy system as well. So it's you can go in. Obviously, the groups are going to be from 10 to 12 in each group, but you can go in twos. Obviously, we'll fill the groups as and when the inquiries come through. But because you're learning the fundamentals, and the fundamentals of golf don't change. People's swings will change, and people will do things and get to the ball in different ways. But ultimately, that strike of the ball should not change. You should be in the same position. And David teaches how to get to that position over a period of time. So when you're going with your friends to these lessons and to the Appearance Academy, then them same friends and that same buddy system, then you can go to the range and you can help each other improve and work the same way me and you do. Me and you will go and get a lesson, and then you'll know what I'm working on. I'll know what you're working on, what you're working on, so that when we get to the driving range, we can talk about it and you can ask me, take a video, let's have a look and see what we're doing, because you understand and you know that. And it's just a way to progress in your game, but in doing the right way. Jordan Spieth, even at the top level, has said, hasn't he, you know, I was taught to swing the golf club and do things the wrong way. So now I've had to completely reverse
that. It, yeah.
And this is for all level golfers as well, isn't it? So it doesn't matter whether you're like me, like you, or whether you're just a beginner. You know, as the fundamentals don't change, and that's what will be taught over these 6 weeks, so you can take yourself onto the golf course. And we're also, through David, going to teach people how to act on a golf course and, you know, certain rules of golf as the levels progress. And if you want to keep coming to the academy, there'll be other levels to progress to, won't there?
Of course, yeah. It's like we said, I think, when we first started the podcast, like, you don't just get in a car and start driving on the motorway. But in golf, you can just literally engross yourself straight away basically on the motorway, on the fairway, hitting balls wherever you want. Like some people that might start playing, they don't even know what the word "for" is or means. They
could just be quite just dangerous hit. As well.
It's dangerous. Like they could be screaming anything. Watch out on your head.
Yeah.
You just don't know. And it's dangerous. So we're just like a little crash course into getting from, you could basically take someone from not knowing one thing or be, touch the golf club for then in 6 weeks time with a pass out course at the end of it, you could be ready for the golf course.
Exactly. Yeah.
And that's the
aim. Whether that decision is to join a golf club and get a handicap and play competitions with members, or whether that's to join a society, you're still on the golf course. 99% of the time you're going to be playing on a golf course where there's going to be members there. So you need to sort of have that ability to know what to do from an etiquette perspective as well, isn't it?
Yeah, of course, of course.
There's those parts of it that'll be learned through the academy. So the idea in a nutshell is to bring people along, bring a community together and help people improve, share best practices and, you know, improve the game of golf, which is what we've always been passionate about, haven't we?
Exactly. And also, by the end of it, people, they've got a new hobby or they've got a hobby that they're better at. They're out in nature and the group atmosphere. You're meeting new people. It's a bit more of a positive habit. It's good for your mental health, but being in a group situation, meeting, like getting out your comfort zone. And when you're out in nature, just walk around the golf course, like you just feel a million times better.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So definitely. There's a load of different aspects to it. So hopefully, like, we'll get it off the ground and I can see it going from strength to strength.
Well, yeah, we've got the first group settled, haven't we? We've got the first sort of trial session going this Thursday. So we'll keep the podcast posted about how it's progressing. And I say, if you want to know any more information about it, just contact us through either the email address or straight on the DM messages on the Instagram.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. Talking about golf then, and going back to obviously my game, I played Southport and Ainsdale and we'd done 3-2-1, it's called.
Southport and Ainsdale.
Yeah, isn't it? Obviously, through the winter, you have different tournaments, don't you? Winter golf, really, and just playing different team events, pretty much. And we played this event called 3-2-1. Don't know if you played it before. Where
that's called the David Goscombe point system, now.
Is it? So where you go, it's a four ball, or you can play in the three, just make it more difficult. And on the first hole, three score. On the second hole, two of the best scores score. And on the third hole, one of the best scores will score, and you go 3-2-1, 3-2-1, 3-2-1.
That's not the David Goscombe point system, though.
No, okay. So that's six times round. Obviously, when three of you have got a score, it's a lot more difficult.
It's a good game, that, though.
It's a good game, yeah, really good. So we played that, and I got myself to 3-under.
Nice.
Gross, right? And I say gross in a team that, obviously, playing with
it's
Danny.
Gross, you even saying that.
Well, I was playing with Danny and a couple of the fellas from the golf club, and got myself to 3-under. I was saying to Danny, he was like, "What are you? How are you playing?" Well, I went 3-under gross. And he starts laughing. I go, "Why are you laughing?" I said, "What do you mean gross? You're 3-under. You're not 3-under net. Are you? You're not going to tell me you're 3-under net." I was going, "Do you know what?" It only off him saying that made me think, why do I actually say 3-under gross? And I think it goes back to the days of a junior where there was that ego, weren't there, and that perception where when you come off the golf course and you'd shoot 2-under gross, you go, "We shot 70, 2-under gross there. Yeah, I was 2-under gross. Yeah, played amazing. Unbelievable game of golf." But you'd shoot a 70 net, 2-under. You'd just say 70. You wouldn't say, "I shot 2-under net." You'd shoot 70 on the perception.
You just hope no one just assumes it's gross.
I hope everyone thinks that he shot 2-under gross there. He must. He wouldn't have told. He would have said 75, wouldn't he? Off a 5 handicap, he wouldn't have said 70. So, yeah, I think it goes back to that, and it's just always stuck with me, that always saying gross. I'm 3. When I'm under gross, I make sure people know, oh, yeah, I'm under gross. This is not 3-under net. This is 3-under gross.
Yeah.
So it was...
Well, do you know what that comes... That when I first was getting down to a decent level, and I was saying today, I was off like 2 or 3, maybe even 3 or 4, and then Dave was like, when you go out there, forget your stroke index. He's like, don't even look at stroke indexes. Don't look where you get shots. Just play golf against the course level.
Just
forget your handicap. Forget it altogether. He's like, that's one of the best things you can do, because you're not like... If you treat a shot hole differently, you know yourself, as soon as you turn up to a shot hole, you're like, and you fuck it up, and you're like,
every time,
oh my god, I always fuck up my shot holes. But if you don't know, then you're like, oh, I've got a shot there. You play the hole for what it is.
Yeah,
it just adds more pressure knowing that you've got a shot and you've got a partner relying on you having that shot.
And we should know that better than anybody, because we've had a number of mental coaches on the podcast who tell you to stay in the moment and just stay, think about that shot.
Don't one shot at a time.
One shot at a time. Stay in the moment.
Dude. Cliche, but it's
exactly.
Right.
But it's so important, isn't it? But I always go back to like, we get a shot on 16. If I get a bird here, it's 4 for 4 points. And you know, if you're playing a little stay with it, it's always that. But you're right. You know, the only way that you're going to make four shots on that hole is by playing four shots. So all you can control is that first tee shot.
Yeah.
And that's it. There's no point in looking at the scorecard, but it's just something that, from with Danny saying that, it made me think, 300 gross, yet why do I say that? And then I thought, it goes back to when I was a junior and when I wanted everyone to think, you know, you want to, when you're a junior, you want to be the best player, don't you? You want everyone to think you've shot the lowest score. So when you go in the clubhouse and you speak to the older members, you go, oh, I shot 70 again today, John. Yeah, brilliant. I was great out there. Oh, great round, Mark. And then you go, I shot 70, 200 gross, John. Yeah, fantastic. Yeah. I birdied the first three and then I knocked this one on four and I was doing this. And you go through your whole round, yeah, but that's what it goes back to.
Well, because when David told me that and getting rid of my handicap, I was happy and I was like playing like well, I was practicing, I was there. And then like now, like I'm sort of going the other way, whereas like when I turn up and it's like my handicap's 1.6 and I get three shots, I'm like, it's right. Where are them holes? Let me know where I can make my score back. It's a little par on empty, that gives me a bit of breathing room. That's
the crazy world of golf as we know it, isn't it?
It's just, it's practice, isn't it? Like, the more you practice, the better you get, and the better you get, the less you care about your shots.
Well, that's it, and I'm more determined now. I've been playing quite well. I'm getting it off the tee now. I've found something off the tee. I'm extending my backswing, and I'm bringing it through a good position through the ball. I'm still not turning as much, but the consistency off the tee is so much better. So, to get to that point in my game, off the tee in January is good for me, because if I keep practicing and keep applying myself, by the time the season starts, I should be able to kick on.
Have you been practicing or have you just been playing?
I've just been playing, but I have had a few range sessions, yeah. I've been practicing with the drive, yeah. I've been working in the gym on flexibility a lot, because I know my backswing's too short. So because of the shortness of my backswing, I get a bit snatchy from the top, and that's where that low left comes in. So if I extend the backswing, it gives me a lot more time and room to clear the hips and to get the club through. And when I look at it on the video, it's not as extended through the back as I'd want it, but it is a bit more. But it feels though I'm swinging it like John Daly when I'm doing it. Yeah, so that's the feeling.
You're more like
I need
John Rahm.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that's the feeling I'm getting at the moment. Feel like John Daly on the backswing. I know you look like him, but feel like him as well. Yeah. So that's the perception I'm going for.
Diet Cokes and peanut M&Ms then.
Lovely.
A few bifters.
What dreams are made of. Hooters, buffalo chicken wings, and many ones. Yeah. So some big news as well that we've got. Where are we going?
Oh, Saudi.
Going to Saudi.
Yeah, that'll be a belt of that.
Yeah. So we're going over to Saudi to work on the Aramco ladies event, aren't we?
We are.
Yeah. From the 13th to the 20th of February, we'll be over to Saudi Arabia to do some work. We'll hopefully be doing some interviews, yet to confirm that, but get some interviews with the players and we'll be inside the ropes, won't we, and doing a bit of on-course content.
It'd be good just to be in the atmosphere and just seeing everything. Like, I've never actually been to it. I've worked at the Women's British Open on the scoreboards. I've never actually been to any other ladies' event.
No.
But yeah, getting over to the event there, if we can tee up a couple of interviews before then, but if not, even just getting the content, getting the atmosphere, seeing what's going on. It's like a $5 million purse, isn't it?
A lot of money at stake for the women, yeah.
Loads of big names will be there.
Will they do attract the big names, yeah? That's the thing. The Ellie Corder always goes and plays, and she's won a couple. Charlie Hull's always over there. Georgia Hall, you know, the best players in the world tend to go over and play that. And the men's is a couple of weeks before as well, so it could be an opportunity for us to go over there, but we're just waiting to see.
We're just waiting to hear about that one. That'd be so unbelievable if we go to both of them.
Well, yeah, because news has just come out, hasn't it, that Jay Monahan has accepted the release for everybody who's asked for it.
Is that him? Obviously, it's because it's not Liv, but it's sort of Liv, isn't it? Is it or not?
It's backed by the same people, isn't it?
The same Saudi investment fund, isn't it?
Yeah, it's an Asian Tour event, isn't it? The Saudi International. It was DP World Tour event.
But then the Asian Tour is a feeder tour, or can be like a thing, a predecessor to Live, isn't it? So it's like,
well, yeah, there was a qualification criteria.
Quite
a wrong word to say that. There's a qualification
Oh my god. Double team.
Criteria, Mark. qualification criteria on the Asian tour to get on to live through the international series.
That's what I mean.
So there is
that
connection.
So anyone that won a couple of things on live, or they won the X amount of events, wasn't it? A couple of the events got on to live.
Yeah.
Loads of like the Asian players, they got picked to go.
Like Scott Vincent and players like that, they all progressed through live and got on to the... progressed to the Asian tour, sorry, and got on to live through there.
So it's sort of like it's not a direct, but it is sort of in cahoots with it, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then loads of the, like Patrick Reed and different people are playing Asian tour events.
Well, the thing with live, it's invitation only, isn't it? There's no qualification criteria as such, even though there was. Yeah, but obviously when we talk about live leagues.
Yeah, but it's only called an invitational to get round the fact of it. The independent contractors and all that nonsense, do you know what I mean? Let's have it right. It was the Saudi Golf League, wasn't it?
It was the Saudi Golf League. Well, they've officially said there's going to be a golf league this year, isn't it?
Well, there you go. So then they've obviously just went with the invitational. They've put the bans out. They've gone into loggerheads, lawsuits, blah, 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 the rest of it.
Well, Monaghan even said, though, you know, he's said it's product versus product because he was asked that. He'd done his Q&A, didn't he, in Hawaii, which we'll come on to a bit later. In more detail, but he said it's product versus product. They've got a different product to ours. He's happy that they're going from strength to strength on the PGA Tour and, you know, looking for more success and more money to be pumped into the tour. But ultimately, it is a product versus product. They're offering something different, which is what we've always said from the past. You can like both.
But that's never really been the problem in our eyes, has it? The problem in our eyes has been where they've blocked everyone that goes to live. It's like you've chosen that product by.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, Liv are like, yeah, play the PGA Tour. We know our product's decent. Play Liv when you want. Just do what you want.
And he was asked that as well in the Q&A. Is there a way back for Liv players? And Jay Monaghan said, my stance on that's not changed. So
this is why my whole stance has been, he needs to go. Well, back to the Saudi. The Saudi Public Investment Fund funds Liv and it's sponsoring the Saudi Invitational. So well, and it's Liv as the predecessor-ish to... Asian Tour is a predecessor-ish to Live. It's like letting them go and play that event. Really, he should have. If he had that big of a stance, that's the first little crack in his arm.
The problem he's got, the reason he could do it with Live is because Live at the time, it was not a recognised tour. It was a breakaway league, wasn't it? Whereas the Asian Tour is a recognised tour with world ranking. So
it's the same things. He's letting them go and play under that banner. It makes no sense.
I don't think he's got a choice. He can either reject the release or accept the release.
He should have rejected it if he wants to keep that stance.
But he tried that last year, didn't he?
Yeah, but that was for them to go and play X amount of events. This is one. Like, then he said you can have you need seven. He's like, you're only allowed three in it with the conflicted. Then basically he just banned them all from doing it, didn't he?
Yeah.
So then now if he's going to take that stance and he's going to keep every moral that he was going to say why Liv was bad, them going to play that, it should be under the same banner, in my eyes.
It's a fair point, but he granted releases last year for them to go and play that tour event.
Because then when Dustin Johnson went and played, you mean?
They all requested releases last year to go and play the Saudi International, and they got them, and the same has happened again. The only concession was, if you go and play the Saudi International, you've got to play the AT&T Pro-Am two of the next three seasons.
Yeah.
So, you know, even like 30 play, I think it was 30 players or something last year who got it. The Harald Varner got the release and went on to win it, didn't he? So,
and then went on to join Liv.
And then went on to join Liv anyway, yeah. So, but there's a lot of players like Tittle Hatton and Shane Lowry played it last year. They got the release, never went to Liv. So, the players who've asked for the release, the names have not been released into the public yet. But it'd be interesting to see if.
Because that'll cause a stir there. Because anyone who's in the rumour mill to go to Live and then they've asked for that, looking at what Varner done, that'll just spark the rumours up, won't it?
But once their name...
It will for me.
Yeah, well, that event's in 4 weeks, isn't it? 3 or 4 weeks. So the field's going to have to get announced pretty soon.
Yeah.
So once them names are released, they've been granted a release from the PGA Tour to play that event. So it'll be interesting to see what that field looks like. And say we can have more of a chat then about who.
Well, the way they've put it in the media is PGA Tour to allow some players in, like, commas.
Well, Jay Monaghan said everybody who's asked for a release has been granted it.
Yeah.
So everybody who's asked for one has been granted it. So
I just don't know why they've wrote it like that. It's like alluding to like he's stopping someone. Maybe it's because of the RS, the
AT&T
thing or something. Somebody like who's asked for the release, but they can't get it because they've already committed to the.
Well, if they played last year and then they play again this year, they're not playing two of the next three AT&Ts because they'll have missed two of the next three.
Oh, two of the next three, including last year's one.
Fact check.
Yeah.
Maybe it's three. I don't know. We'll find out.
We'll come on to that. We'll see. We'll reconvene that when the field gets announced.
We will. Okay, that's fine. And then the only other thing before we get on to the Birdie Bogey Bus, two things really. Just a bit of news about the Fantasy Golf League.
Yeah.
I know last year we run that, and we run it every year around this time. Essentially, what's happened over the last 2 years with the Fantasy Golf League is the point system's working well. Everyone's enjoying it that's playing it. It's just too much to do manually.
Yeah.
So over the last 3 or 4 months, we've been working with a development team, and in particular a friend of ours who's pulled it all together, worked as magic, and we've got an automated system now. So the new Fantasy Golf League will go ahead in 2023 for the season, likely to be starting the beginning of February, realistically. We'll provide more news on the social media pages, but basically it's going to sit behind a paywall. You can win cash prizes for your points, and everything's automated, so you pick your players through your login credentials, and all the league will be updated automatically. So
fingers crossed.
In an ideal world, that's how it'll work.
We're yet to see it. So when we see it, lay eyes on it, we can give a full thank God that is done moment.
Yeah, and I think you'll enjoy it as well.
Steps towards it, isn't there? We are making steps.
It's like anything on this podcast. You know, we've been here for 2 years now, haven't we? 2 full years with the podcast, and we're improving every element of it. You know, we started off just a podcast with bad audio, then the audio got better, then the YouTube's getting better. We've got big plans for the YouTube, the clothing brand's out, the Fantasy Golf League's being automated. We've got the Appear on Academy. We've got the Appear on Athlete, which we'll give more information on as the new season starts. So there's all little things, and, you know, the interviews are going to progress as well as we move into 2023 as well, aren't they?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We've got an advert for the job if anyone wants one. You've got that much going on.
Exactly, yeah. Where do we find the time? But just one last point before we move on to the Birdie Bogey Bust. It was just a topic of discussion, really, I wanted to put past you. And it's about the guaranteed money in golf. So there was news released mid last year around anybody who comes from the Korn Ferry Tour, graduates from the Korn Ferry Tour to the PGA Tour, is guaranteed 500k to start the season. So I had a little look because we're seven or eight events in to the PGA Tour now, and for the first few events throughout the fall, that's the biggest opportunity for the Korn Ferry players, while the top players have time off after the President's Cup over the Christmas period. That was the time for those players to have a go. So I had a little look at earnings from the beginning of the 2022-23 season to now through the first 8 events to see what the figures looked like. So I got some information. Now, the top 25 that qualified through the Korn Ferry Tour standings, because they'd qualified through Korn Ferry, they all got the guaranteed 500K, which it translates to $12.5 million. 7 of the 25 players have already earned over the 500K in the first 8 events.
So then, they don't pay that back, do they, or not?
No, so the way it works is if you earn more than, you get given 500K, that's yours to keep. If you earn over that, so for the first events that you don't earn it, you don't win no prize money, you've got that in the bank. When you start earning 510K, then that 10K is what gets paid to you then.
So it's an advance.
It's an advance, yeah. But the guarantee is that if you don't earn up to 500K, the PGA Tour pay for that anyway. So you get guaranteed money of 500K regardless. So
it's like a little buffer.
It is, yeah. And what's interesting about that is 8 of the 25 players have earned less than 100K in the first 8 events. So from that top 25...
So for out of them 8 there, they'd have, say, with all their expenses, they probably have 40 grand in the bank, whereas they've got 450 sort of thing.
Yeah, so for example, Carl Wan, who finished number 1 on the Korn Ferry Tour last season, qualified as the top-ranked player, he's earned so far in 5 events, 75,540, but he's got 500K in his bank. But then somebody like...
Well, not really, because when you take out his travel, his food, his accommodation, he'd probably have, if he didn't have that 500k, he'd probably have about, what, 30 grand left, 20 grand left?
Yeah. So to be eligible, you need to compete in 15 PGA Tour events, so the halfway there through 7-8 events. Augusto Nunes, he's played 7 events, and in 7 events, he's earned 13,845. So he would likely be playing at a loss, would he?
Definitely. Depends where you stay in that, doesn't it? If you're balling in like the Four Seasons or something, then yeah. But I think if he stayed in his car, he'd be all right.
See, but it, you know, it just goes to show you, like, the point I'm getting at is, I just want to know,
it's life changing,
is
this, isn't it?
Is the guarantee? It is, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because we've always talked about in the past.
Depends who you are. Obviously, some people might not be. You could go out and win, can't you? And well, Taylor, it's not on, isn't it?
Taylor Montgomery, he's had 7 events and he's earned 1.4 million.
There you go. It's a fart in the wind to him, isn't it? But the rest of them, like that, it's just, Nunes is.
But if the question could be, though, if Taylor Montgomery didn't get that 500k advance and didn't have that pressure off him, would he have went out and won 1.4k and performed as well as he did?
Well, he's a different one, isn't he? Because he got loads of starts toward the back end of last year, didn't he, and stuff. So he's a bit of a prodigy, isn't he, I think?
Yeah.
He's going to be up there. He'll be probably in the top 20 shortly.
Yeah.
By judging off the way they get them out of college and they know how good they are, blah, blah, blah. But for instance, that 500k there, imagine the panic from that Nunes and his and family. And because you got to remember, he could, that 500k could get him to travel with family, with people. You're not paying for one person, you're paying for two.
Yeah,
get him out there. And then, like, he could be family in a position comforts now, back against the wall, thinking, oh my god, I've had 8 events, what am I going to do? And whereas
he finished 6th in Corn Ferry, so he's not a bad player,
of course. Yeah,
he's gone through a whole season there and finished 6th out of everybody on Corn Ferry. So,
you just might have had a little bit of break through that, like, a bit of time off working on a few things. Like, he could have went straight from there, not get the 500k, not have changed his golf game, scared to change it because he's doing well, but it only get him so far. Then he's made a few changes, knows he's got that buffer, and then come back firing after Christmas.
And you're going to see, you're going to see a lot more players, that's obviously all hypothetical.
Hypothetical, but it's one of them, isn't it? It could very feasible.
So far, out of the 12.5 million that's on offer to the top 25, 8 million has been earned in 8 events. So it does show you that the likelihood is
the PGA Tour aren't going to fork it out.
Well, yeah, the PGA Tour aren't going to be out of pocket.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, is there an argument then based on that? Do they increase that? Or is 500k enough?
More people, maybe.
Yeah, potentially.
Because you were saying you have to be a PGA Tour rookie or have qualified from last year's.
Have to be a returning Corn Ferry or a PGA Tour rookie to get the advance up front.
What does retaining Corn Ferry mean?
So you qualify to be the top 25.
What does retaining mean?
So you played on the Corn Ferry Tour last season, so you're retaining from the Corn Ferry Tour.
Yeah, but retaining means that you've been there before, doesn't it?
Yeah, so you're either playing on the PGA Tour as your first season.
Yeah.
Or you've qualified through the Corn Ferry Tour.
So you can't have been on the PGA Tour, gone down to Corn Ferry and then returned to the PGA Tour.
Yeah, that's what the retaining is. So
you're not a rookie.
So that's the two options. Yeah, there's a rookie, and then there's a retaining Corn Ferry.
Yeah.
So if you've never played in the PGA Tour before and you qualify for the Corn Ferry, you're a rookie.
Yeah, yeah.
If you've been PGA Tour for 4 years, went down to Corn Ferry and then re-qualified, you'll get the 500k.
Sad, isn't it?
Yeah. And then anybody who sits outside that bracket, they'll still get the 500k, but it'll be at the end of the season.
Right.
So you don't get the advance up front. So if you finished 140th...
Was that just for next season then?
No, so if you finished 140th on the PGA Tour,
yeah,
FedEx, lost your card, went to Corn Ferry Finals, regained your card through Corn Ferry Finals, you're not a returning Corn Ferry player and you're not a rookie. So you're not eligible for the advance up front.
Ah, I see.
But you're still eligible for the 500k. It's just at the end of the season. So throughout that whole season...
If you just get injured and you don't do nothing at the end of the season, you're going to get £500,000?
No, because you've got to pay 15 events.
Right.
You got to pay 15 events to be eligible for it. So injury's different, isn't it? Because then you get medical exemptions, can't you?
Yeah, yeah.
So,
yeah.
But ultimately, if you had a bad season and you've dropped out and you earned 100k for that whole season for one reason or another but played in the 15 events, you'll get 400k given to you. at the end of the year.
So, yeah. So it's like an advance or guaranteed earnings.
Yeah.
Whichever way you look at it.
It's guaranteed earnings both ways, but it's either you get an advance because if you're coming up from Korn Ferry, you've not had the opportunities to earn that money. If you've played a full season on the PGA Tour, the likelihood is you're going to be okay financially, aren't you?
Decent, isn't it?
I think so, yeah. I just wanted to discuss, obviously, where they're at to so far this season. So in total, for the 50 players, 25 that got through from Korn Ferry Finals and 25 that got through Korn Ferry Tour standings, 50 players in total, 25 million guaranteed. There's been 13.5 million earned so far across the 50 players. 10 of the 50 players have earned over 500k so far, so only 20%. And then 21 of the 50 players, so nearly half, are yet to earn 100k. So that shows you that those 21 players who are yet to earn 100k would probably be considering, you know, can I afford this? Is this right for me? Well, but now just, they've got that opportunity.
Unless they've
to,
set the money out aside for them to do it.
Or got a sponsor.
Or got a sponsor. Oh, that's it. Yeah, got a sponsor. But you're digging into the archives, aren't you?
Well, that's it. And you don't know what type of deal you get with somebody. Somebody who's a sponsor, they're investing in your ability, aren't they? So is there a return on that investment? How does it all work? You just don't
and
know what's
going on. And
you
could be like, there's pressure, isn't there? Like, what are you up to? What's going on? And sort it out.
How long does this last for? Whereas that 500k, it's guaranteed, it's in your pocket. And like you say, you maybe have got a bit more time to work on your game and think, do you know what, the back end of the season, I might be able
to do
something.
Well, you've got a year, haven't you? Not like three events to sort of
well,
do
there's
it.
There's 30 events left on the PGA Tour. And then you've got the four majors, whether they play in that or not, you just don't know. But there's 30 events left to play for.
So how many? So there's been eight events on the PGA Tour so far this season?
Eight and nine. I think since you was the ninth, yeah.
So at the end of this one, they're going to the rolling year, aren't they?
Yeah, so there's no fall season after this one.
So then you start January as a year, 2024. It's going to be a year.
It's going to end in August and start again in January, yeah.
Which is better, isn't it?
It is better, yeah, but it's less events.
Less of it. I mean, I've just thought like from now, like we're starting, it's brand new year, everything's go. But then there's eight events being played and it's just like...
Well, there's eight events being played, but it also, it skews the FedEx rankings as well because you still get maximised points in those events.
Yeah.
So I think Seamus Power's number one at the moment in the FedEx.
Yeah.
I'm not saying he doesn't deserve to be there. He's played well, but ultimately if they were stronger fields, would he be number one?
Definitely not.
Exactly. So... I think it stands the tour in good stead because potentially, like we've spoke about in the past, when we talked to players on the professional route, you can get a sense of like the pressure financially what players who are trying to make it feel.
Maybe as well with the Seamus Power, Keegan Bradley who's a bit out of form. I can't remember a few of the people who were up there in the standings at the minute. You just don't know. Like, they might need that little break with the big boys not being there to get the little head start. It's like a handicap, isn't it? They're getting a head start.
Yeah.
Like, as you say, Taylor Montgomery, Adam Svensson, Brian Harman, Mackenzie Hughes, these are like the not like guaranteed top anything, are they? So,
they don't go to events as favourites, do
no,
they?
No, definitely
not. You
know
what I mean? So, you're going to get good odds on them to pick up a win each week. Whereas, you know, John Rahm showed this week at the Centre Tournament of Champions the level of golf that gets played at the top end. I mean, you just go back to what his record over his last couple of months is quite staggering, isn't it?
He's had four wins or something since August.
Yeah.
I read an interesting thing there saying that if you put John Rahm's last 20 rounds and picked his last best eight, his handicap would be plus 13.
It's phenomenal.
What even is that mention? What even is that stat?
So he wouldn't get a shot on. He wouldn't get a shot on stroke index 1-13 gross. Right then, yeah. So it's looking good, as I say. The we're looking towards a very, very good season again. Aren't we? We've obviously got the Live Golf League concept to look forward to. We've got the PGA Tour now with the elevated events. We've got guaranteed 12 events of the top players in the world playing. We've got the four majors as we always have. You know, there's going to be controversy. We've got the Netflix documentary coming out as well. It'll be interesting to see what comes out off the back of that. So it's a really exciting time for golf, isn't it?
It's unbelievable. When you talk about, like, because I was watching this thing last night, because obviously my girlfriend wanted me to watch it, but the rise of the Kardashians, like how they come to fame.
Oh, yeah.
No, but how they come to fame and what happened and how like Kim Kardashian worked it with the mother and the reality show and the drama, and they teed it up and they faked it and they hooked the public. Like, when you look at these big TV things, it's half like the Netflix documentary. Like, what come first? Did that come first, or did the live drama come? Because it's a bit of a coincidence that it just all happened on the same year.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
It's like, come on.
Yeah.
What a year to start filming golfers when everyone's running around. There's absolute bedlam. Like, was that planted or what?
Greg Norman pouring beer cans into people's face off a balcony. Like, what? I know.
Like, imagine they'd done this documentary like 2 years ago. It'd be like, okay, yeah, there's golf. Well, in.
They're not actors, though, are they? You can't.
Yeah, but no, but it doesn't matter. It doesn't have to be, like, but the reality TV stars, they're not actors, but you just fall into
the role.
And it doesn't matter. And they're not. People aren't watching it for the acting. People are watching it for the drama.
Yeah. Yeah. It is a coincidence. I'm all for the fact that it's...
No. Well, I was. Only watching that last night with this fella's like, Kim Kardashian came to me, said, I want to be the most famous woman on the planet. Paris Hilton told her to do a sex tape. This happened. She faked the proposal. Like, the ratings were dipping. And it just so happened that there was a wedding that next week. No one could stop talking about it. It tripled the ratings. She was divorced 72 days later. And I was just like, oh my God, the world is hooked on this. Now they're a $1 billion dynasty. And it's like, it all happened. And I'm like, golf, hang on a minute. Hang on a minute. Well,
remind me never to watch that then.
Which?
That Kardashian thing, because I believe that it's all legit.
Well, do you know what? I hope it is, but I've got me doubts.
Skeptical now.
Tell you what is real. The Højgaard twins signing with Callaway.
Oh, yeah.
They've signed a deal with Callaway. Callaway seemed to be following in like a little footstep of TaylorMade, where they got the big six doing the adverts. Like the way they've took that good podcast to do, or like the good lad doing on YouTube, doing like lots of promotional videos. Like, they've got off to a flyer there with Jon Rahm booting Morikawa's head in.
And the look of that Paradigm Driver as well looks phenomenal, doesn't it? Look like a bit of a beast. It's my favourite one there. No, looking visually,
yeah,
not hit any of them.
Are you going by it then?
What
are you going by it then, you little mush?
I'm hitting the M4, boss.
Yeah, belter.
Yeah,
club reviews next year, or the next club reviews we need to get on them. Yeah. January,
what, next year, 2024?
No, just me, like, it's January when they come in it, so we take our little break, don't we? And really, we should be bladdering manufacturers, like, get us them now,
yeah.
No, we forget that it's Jan, innit?
Yeah, we'll get there.
Yeah.
Should we go into that time again?
Go on then.
First one of the season.
Go on then. It's that time again, y'all. The birdie boogie bust. The birdie boogie bust.
Birdie boogie bust. I'll let you go first. What's your birdie?
It's got to be Jon Rahm shooting 10 under to win the event.
It was unbelievable what he'd done, wasn't it? Let's talk about the Century Tournament of Champions now then while we're on it. So, you know, I think with 8 holes to go, he's got...
What's your birdie?
Mine's different.
Okay, go on.
Yeah, so... Go on, what?
No, I just thought it was the same thing. It's like...
No, mine's different. Mine's different topic. So, we'll talk Century Tournament of the Champions now, seeing as though we're talking about that event. I mean, with 7 or 8 holes to go, he's got a what? Morikawa's got, what, a 9-shot lead, and then, you know, an hour and a half later, he's 3 back going down the last.
It's crazy, wasn't it?
It was just phenomenal how that completely changed. And is it Morikawa feeling the pressure because he hasn't been there for a while, and, you know, there's big talk about his putting and how his putting's improved, and that's why he went so far ahead, because he didn't miss a putt, he was striking it. We all know how well he strikes the ball. He's got the new driver in the bag, the Stealth 2. That's going like a bomb down the middle every time, and he's knocking the putts in that he's putting them close. So, you know, did the putter run out, or did he make mistakes? He's come out and said he made mistakes and hit poor shots at the wrong time.
Well, it wasn't even the putter, though, was it? Because he was it on 14? Yeah, 14, he played a bunker shot over the green, which is nothing to do with the putter. 15, he chunked his third shot that didn't make it up the hill, and then he's bogeyed 16 as well.
Yeah, but that's the last 6 holes, though, isn't it? He wasn't... For the first couple of days, he was knocking putts in front nine. And
no, of course, yeah, but none of them mistakes are missed putts, are they?
No, they're not. No, so, you're right. And he
and
still
then
got
he didn't
quite
have
a
he didn't have a bogey through, what was it, like 50, 60 odd holes or something?
Yeah,
and then all of a sudden he just the wheels just fell off. Whereas Ram Birdie 12, 13, 14, and then 15. And
pressure like, mounts then, doesn't it?
It's four or five, there's seven shots swinging. It's just like it was just a table turner over the exact stretch of holes. It like that. When it come down to it, Ram just was on fire.
Yeah, 10 under final round, mate. You know, I didn't expect it, if I'm honest, for Morikawa to do what he'd done. But if you've got somebody like Ram chasing your heels, you're going to see it. You're going to feel that pressure. I know they weren't playing together, but you are going to feel
even
that pressure.
Even just looking
at
the leaderboards. Well, isn't it mad the way, like, Ram started the day 17 under, bogeyed the first. So he's 16 under. Like, if he shoots level par or one under from there, so he's level for the day, he probably finishes mid-table for the whole tournament. But he goes on. He said he needed a small miracle, didn't he, before he started. And then after bogeying the first, he said, I'm going to need somewhat of a larger miracle. And then he went on to shoot 11 under from there.
I think, what was it? He had six 67s in a row, was it? Something like that.
I'm not too sure.
Five or six 67s in a row at the plantation course. So,
oh, yeah.
Or better. So, you know, he's never shot over that. And on the Friday, he shoots 71.
Yeah.
Round that course, which is just hand and birdies out to people, drivable par fours, getting up to pretty much all the par fives in two. You know, shooting 71 is like shooting 75, 76, really, when you look at the field. So, over that four-round event, you're thinking he's out of it, really, aren't you? He drops down to mid-table and then has, obviously, a good Saturday and then an unbelievable Sunday to take it on with a bit of help from Morikawa.
Well, you got to think there as well, like, I don't know if, like, fate or, like, he deserved it, but he shot 33 under last year and lost.
Yeah.
Like, that's what even goes on there.
Well, that was a record breaker, wasn't it? Yeah.
So, for him to then, he's probably thinking, like, I deserve this.
Yeah.
Like, this owes me something.
I hope that the play, obviously last season, this was the catapult of Cam Smith, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Cam Smith went on. You look at that leaderboard now, you know, Scotty Scheffler finished tied seventh. Fitzpatrick was up there. Zalatoris had a good round. Tom Kim was up there, even though he faded off towards the end of the tournament, but he had another good event, finished tied fifth, 22 under. You know, Tom Kim is now favourite going in this week to the Sony Open. Like the transformation, that's the Sony Open with the likes of Jordan Spieth playing. Tom Kim is now going in as a hot favourite to these events. John Rahm wins, Morikawa second, Tom Kim fifth, you know, Tony Finau, Scotty Scheffler, Fitzpatrick, all tied seventh. Like I said, Will Zalatoris back, Jordan Spieth up there. So, you know, when I talked earlier about we're in for a treat this season, like all these players now, fan favourites as well, they're all performing at the top level consistently. So when we see these 12 elevated events, it's just going to be unbelievable.
1,000,000%. Do you agree with Ram there when he's saying that since August, he's the best player in the world?
Difficult one, isn't it? Because we had this conversation about player of the year and we were only talking really about Cam Smith, Scotty Scheffler and Rory McIlroy, weren't we?
Yeah.
John Ram wasn't in the question. But when you look at his credentials and what he's done since August, it's difficult to say, and you've got to think of where he went as well. He went over to Spain, he's travelled around, and he's won it on different continents, hasn't he?
Yeah.
So, I think it's Rory still, if I'm honest. And I know, and I think it's Rory, Rahm and Cam Smith as the best three players in the world, undoubtedly, with Scotty Scheffler probably just behind them. But I disagree with Rahm there, in a sense that I think Rory has been phenomenal throughout the whole season, never mind since August. But if we're talking about just since August, I'd go with Rory still.
Yeah.
What about you?
No, I just think that you don't really hear golfers say things like that.
No.
It's quite bold, isn't it, to start chatting that.
But he can back it up, though.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm saying Rory, but that's just an opinion. Like, you know, you can ask 100 people and 99 might say Ram and just me saying Rory because it is close.
Yeah.
There's not much in it. I was just really impressed with Rory.
No, it is, yeah. Well, you got to think of what Rory done there. It's got to be Rory, hasn't it?
In my opinion, yeah, I think so. But it's exciting that Rahm and Rory are going to be going head-to-head a lot more next year.
Yeah.
Especially when we talk about
it's
going to be
exciting that they're on the same team as well come September.
I know. That's another thing, isn't it?
Need a few bit more injection of, like, somebody else coming up to
Well,
that
them. Brings me on to My Birdie, because My Birdie is the upcoming Hero Cup. And seeing Mansell and Ewan Ferguson being selected for that team and how far they've come since being on the podcast. You know, we spoke to both of them when they were Challenge Tour players.
Yeah.
You know, and to see the progression and what they've done, obviously, because they've been on the podcast, you'd have a, you'd have that relationship sort of thing, don't you, with them, where you want to keep an eye on them and you want them to do well.
They're part of the alumni, aren't they?
Exactly, yeah. They're part of the team, aren't they? So it is, it's just great to see them both, because that's top level, that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like in the past, them two would have been playing the events that on the DP World Tour in South Africa. They're not now. They're waiting for the Rolex event.
Yeah, million percent.
They're playing the Hero Cup, then they're going to play Rolex.
They're out in Dubai. They're practicing. They're, yeah. Like, they're chilling. They're not scrounging around for the card. They can pick the schedules, the events, especially Ewan, because he's won two events.
It's... And it's great to see as well. It just shows that, like, any aspiring amateur now, like, Richie Mansell didn't play for England.
No.
You know what I mean? And he's gone from there, played Euro Pro, won on Euro Pro, played Challenge, qualified through Challenge Tour, and now he's on the DP World Tour, and then obviously being picked by the Ryder Cup captain. That's an honour in itself, isn't it? Luke Donald, yeah, to play on Tommy Fleetwood's team. And then Ewan obviously winning twice last year, doing what he's done. Obviously was a Scottish national, won all the, was ranked quite low in the amateur, played Walker Cup. So that's two of them have gone different paths, haven't they? In the
more than one way to skin a cat, and exactly, it gets straight, yeah, to the both lead to the same spot. They're in the same team, aren't they?
Same team, yeah.
And then, as obviously, what brought us on to this is probably thinking that the next progression for them could be Ryder Cup.
Well, that's it, yeah. They, you know, this sets up nicely, this Hero Cup, which we'll come on to when we talk about the teams, when we review it a bit later. But this Hero Cup now, and those players on that team, there's 20 players, you know. I think there's probably 6 or 7 guarantees, maybe 8 guarantees. So there's probably 4 or 5 spots there. And you've got about 15 of the 20 on that team who are going to, because the likes of Tyrrell Hatton and Shane Lowry are probably already there, aren't they?
Yeah.
So
Tommy.
So it's exciting time to see how the two lads go on this season. You and multiple DP World Tour winner Mansell. Nearly got it over the line a couple of times last season, in particular the Dunhill when he had that lead going into the final round. So it's a win's just round the corner. So how good would it be if they're both in the Ryder Cup team?
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
What a rise.
And then in addition to that, while we're on the point of alumni, I just wanted to mention as part of me, Birdie, as well, Gemma Driver, she's been elected to the LPGA Tour Board as a player director.
Sick.
So again, interesting to see. Obviously, Gemma's rise as well. Obviously, when we spoke to her, she was...
There's something in that, isn't there?
Yeah, you know, just watch what I'm getting. That's the Birdie, you know what I mean? If you want to win events and be a well-known golfer, come on the Bogey Boys podcast. But the Gemma Driver point is that, you know, she was playing Symetra Tour and Rose Lady Series when she come on, and it's interesting to see how she's progressed and grown, got a full LPGA Tour card, won on the LPGA Tour for the first time this year, and now obviously shows the type of person she is to be elected as a player director. She'll join Mel Reed, Elizabeth Svokol, and Kelly Tan, and they're going to replace Lydia Ko, Amy Olsen, Alina Sharp, and Michelle Wee West.
Fast rise, that, to be filling big shoes, isn't it?
Yeah, not half.
When,
yeah,
you think about it.
Exactly, yeah.
Wow.
All credit to Gemma as well. Obviously, she's had a fantastic season, hasn't she? Winning the first LPGA Tour event and the first season with a full card. So onwards and upwards. And, you know, we've got the Solheim Cup coming as well as the Ryder Cup this year. So, yeah, you know, watch out, because Gemma's more than likely going to be in that team for the first time as well.
1,000,000%.
So more alumni playing the big events.
And with quick rises as well.
Yeah. Ever since they come on the pod, not just saying.
No, just saying, yeah.
Bogey, what is it?
Well, back to the Century Tournament of Champions. Morikawa, that blow up, if you can call it that, blip.
That's my bogey, that.
A few stretcher holes.
Yeah.
So, basically, you can't really say it was the pressure. Like, he didn't really mention that, did he? He just said he felt sadness.
He hit bad shots at bad times, he said. So, where is, you know, when he hit his bad shots and put them in certain positions, it was the place that you couldn't miss.
Yeah.
So I think that's what it was.
Wrong shot, wrong time.
What it was, yeah.
But then Rahm got asked if halfway through the tournament if he'd lost hope. And he said no. And then I don't know if this was a little lived jab or not, to get started off early in the year, but he said, no, we have 4 days for the reason. And I was like, okay. So you have to complete all 72 holes last time I checked. So yeah, that's golf. So absolutely no remorse for Morikawa. Just give me that trophy and see you in a bit.
Well, my bogey's the same, and actually that leads me onto my bust. When you're talking about LIV, I'm disappointed in the lack of progress in the LIV schedule, me. The first event is just 6 or 7 weeks away. It's the 24th to the 26th of February in Mexico.
Yeah.
We haven't got the full 48 field announced, what they're expecting.
He didn't last time, though, did he? That will be because there'll be some hesky hitters moving.
Yeah, after Saudi, you think, or around the Saudi.
Or just someone big, like a
I just think, for me,
or someone.
The reason it's me bust is just the momentum was building so well. You know, they had a... Go on.
No, when I've got something to say, so after Cantley, losing his Hugo Boss thing, the Callaway, all that, or the Titleist, he's dropped his sponsors, and he's change, shake up. That he's going to live him. That's my call. Go on.
He said no, though, hasn't he?
Yeah, I don't care.
Yeah.
Just so did Dustin Johnson and Bryson and Brooks and all that.
Yeah, I suppose.
So did Cam Smith. Just,
Well,
say
I suppose
it,
he's not gonna go. He's not gonna go, yeah, I'm going, yeah. But so fair enough. Yeah. But it's just, I think the progress and the way LIV was going, and it was, you know, there was a bit of buzz. I know there's a lot of people who don't like it, which is fair enough, each their own. There was a lot of buzz about LIV and the concept of it and what was happening, and there was talk about no, it's going to be a league format next year. We're going to have new team names. The captains are going to be released. I'm thinking, well, it's the 9th of January. You've only got 6 or 7 weeks before the first event.
I reckon you'll find out that till week before.
You want to be,
you'll do that as an event, as a, they've done them things where they do the draw and they sit there and Nelly's
draft
on and all that.
Yeah.
Probably get Eminem in or something. Like, they'll do that like show stopping. Like, that's the opener for the new. Let's have it, 14 events, boom, town.
Yeah, I'm just excited for the PGA Tour season to start, the DP World Tour season to start, and I just want to get excited for LIV as well, and what that's got to come, but I can't, because I don't really know what's going on, and that's why it's me bust. But go on, what's your bust?
Basically, most things that Monahan was saying in his interview, when we go through it now, I just don't agree with them. Either I don't agree with them, I don't think he's telling the truth, it's diplomatic. It's political, and he answered wrong. That's in my opinion.
You know what? Okay, fair enough. And, you know, so do you want me to go through the questions?
Might as well, yeah. I'll just go pick a few.
So if we look at the questions that were asked then, so, you know, first one was around, were you disappointed with the Masters decision to let LIV golfers play? So he said there, as you'd expect, he wasn't surprised with the decision because it's an invitational. They're following the criteria, so there was no surprise there. The next question was about...
That question should have been asked different. That should have been asked, not were you surprised, like, were you disappointed? And then he'd answer a bit different then, wouldn't he? Because he's obviously would have loved Augusta to go with the same stance as what he's got.
Yeah.
But go on.
Yeah. Well, the next question then is just about... talking about the tour product. So just somebody asking, is it important that the designated events, which is the new name for the elevated events that they're calling them, that like the WGCs have cuts to further distinguish what is being offered versus LIV? And it's ironic that that question's being asked at an event where
there's
a limited field and there is no cut,
which turned out to be a showstopper.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, he said, I think it's an important consideration. He said he's always thought that, he's always felt that a cut is an important element of the PGA Tour. So, you know, if you're going to have the best players together, depending on where you end up in the field size, you think it's absolutely important consideration.
Yeah. It's just not, though, is it?
Yeah, we've had this conversation on last year's pod, didn't we?
If you take a cut away from every event, it doesn't make it. It's not going to make a difference, is it?
But we spoke about this. It is, though, isn't it? Because, you know, if you've got 155 feet on greens, everyone goes off early. Do you know what I mean? Like, the course is more damaged because you've got more players on the course. So then the leaders who are going out on a Sunday, I've had 155 players out before them rather than having 75.
Yeah, but it's just like saying that when you go out on a Thursday, you've had X amount of... on that note, then a Friday should be the worst round.
Yeah, but that you get morning and afternoon, don't you?
You were playing last on a Friday, it should be the worst scoring ever. that should be technically be the worst, isn't it?
Well, you're most disadvantaged. I'd agree with that. Yeah,
you reckon, yeah.
Because of the well, it's obvious you are, aren't you?
Not really, because sometimes people go out on a Friday like that and shoot good scores.
It depends on course conditions, doesn't it? Yeah. I suppose at the same time, if the course ultimately, you know, you've got more chance of going in a divot.
Mm.
You've got more chance of having bobbles on the greens.
Yeah.
You know, there's those things to think about. So if you cut the field in half, there's less divots on the course. There's less dimples in the green.
Is the advantage? You can repair the pitch mark, can't you?
And yeah, you can, yeah. But it's more the feet marks as well, the soft greens. You know, there's a lot to consider, I think. And tee times as well. You're pushing people back to tee off later.
Yeah.
Because there's more people to get out.
But I don't think that's the reason that they give for why a cut should be happening.
Well, so why do you think a cut shouldn't happen?
No, I don't think it should or shouldn't happen. I just don't think it's a massive difference. The only thing that makes a difference is when you go to just make it. So it makes it exciting to make it, and then you've made it, and you're guaranteed money then. The cut's really there for the money, isn't it?
Well, the cut off the money. Yeah, you cut off the money, yeah.
It's not really like anything else to it apart from that, but like the live with the guaranteed money, it only makes a difference. It doesn't make a difference to the leaders, I don't think. Whether they've, like, if you play the 140-man field, four-day event with no cut, like, the leaders, I think the same person would still win the tournament, whether there was an extra 70 people there or not.
Yeah.
Unless the person, people who come on the bubble, and then the...
What about the cost implications where if you finish 140th in a tournament, how much are you getting paid for that? And you've got to do another two nights accommodation?
No, of course, personally it is, but I mean, as a tournament... There's loads of arguments against the cut or for a cut from a personal, from a course standpoint, from a viewing standpoint, a tee time thing, a light issue. But as a whole, having it or not, I don't think it affects the outcome of the winner.
No.
Do you get me? Well, or it doesn't make the tournament any better.
Yeah. It goes back to that point, though, doesn't it? You just made all those points for and against having a cut, they do impact the winner, in my opinion.
Do you reckon?
But yeah, because the tee times are changing, there's more footfall. You know, there's...
Well, it's one thing you're never going to know because it's never happened.
No.
So everything that you're saying, sort of hearsay, isn't it?
Yeah.
Versus like the Zozo, where there's how many players in that? 70-odd?
70, yeah.
No cut. And
WGC is 50 no cut.
50 no cut. Yeah. 50. I was trying to think of ones with a bit more.
But the FedEx is 70, isn't it? Before
70 no cut. Like having 70 extra people play before them, like, I don't know, would it make a difference? I suppose you could argue it might do, but you'd never know, would you?
Yeah. It's interesting debate, but is that why it's your bus just because he's me?
No, just loads of things. It was more the players' question, to be honest, saying, is the players going to lose any stature? And he's like, no, it's not. But wait, there, the defending champion's not there. The world number three or whatever he is, not there.
Yeah.
Like, it's having Cam Smith not there, it impacts it massively.
He said his position's not changed on it. There being a way back for live players as well.
There you go, exactly. That's another thing. It's like, he said, like I keep saying, like, once you get rid of him, there will be room to sit down and talk.
He said those players have made their decisions and they're there.
Under his rule.
Yeah.
So.
But then you talk about the players' situation, about whether he's concerned. He said he's not. He says he looks at everything on a long-term basis and by an objective measure. When you get to March and we get to TPC Sawgrass, given the investments we continue to make in the course and the facility, and given the investment we continue to make in the event, in his conversations with all of our players, including our top players, I think that the event only continues to grow in stature.
Well, not in stature of field anyway, because obviously you're not having your defending champion, like I just said there, but even in the stature of the event and the investment, that investment's only coming because there was obviously the players was one of the biggest, but then you've elevated all the other events and that one even more. It's like that would only happen because there was a threat.
Well, yeah, it's I think there's no hiding the fact that the PGA Tour have sped up I know they've always said that the plans was always to do this, but they've definitely sped it up off the back of Liv. Yeah. Whether they had plans to do it or not, you know, it's each to their own. You either believe that statement or you don't. But ultimately,
when they do it,
well, this is right. They had plans. Yeah, exactly. I know. I agree. The Liv golf is a serious threat to the PGA Tour, and it's forced their hand to make these moves to make the PGA Tour more viable for players to want to stay.
1,000,000%.
Because they are under threat of another tour with a lot of money. Yeah. So,
obviously anyone that's listening, go and listen to the interview or look at the questions yourself and make your own decision. But in my mind, I just feel like some of the answers that he gave, and I just think that he is the problem in my eyes.
Yeah.
For everyone just getting along.
Can we all just get along? No, it's been good. Yeah, it's been good. Good first tournament with the Centre Tournament of Champions. You know, we're there now, aren't we? 2023 is kicking off. We've got a couple of events to look forward to this week. The first one is the Sony Open, staying in Hawaii. And we've also got the Hero Cup. So we'll come on to the Hero Cup in a moment and go through those teams and the partnerships that we think would be best. But first, Sony Open. Hideki Matsuyama to defend his title. Looking to be the first player to go back-to-back since Jimmy Walker.
Yeah, at the Wiley Country Club. Par 70. And then even with the altitude, it's only 7,044 yards.
Well, yeah, this has always been a whoever puts the best wins this one.
It's a tight one, isn't it? Quite narrow layout, loads of trees. Like, there's 80-odd bunkers, isn't there?
Yeah, I seen a statistic. I can't remember who it was who put it up, but... whoever has this event always has the highest winning strokes gain margin versus the field. So since 2010, the winners have always gained 48.6% of their strokes putting versus the field.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you need to put well around here to have a chance of winning.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Any of them tight courses, it all comes down to the putting. Well, even like most. Remember John Rahm's little outburst? Yeah. Piece of shit putting contest.
That was the Amex, wasn't it?
Yeah.
American Express, yeah. I think you have like a few of these tournaments as we build up to like the Players. They are shorter birdie fests, aren't they?
Yeah.
You do find that. Obviously, the Genesis is a bit different, but yeah, I think you do find that. It stormed off, didn't he? Piece of shit putting contest. So funny, yeah. Jordan Spieth's in the field this week, and as I mentioned, Tom Kim as well. You know, he comes back off his maiden victory at the end of last season. And then
he's your boy, isn't he, Tom Kim? You love him, don't you?
I just think he's a character that you need at the moment. You know, he knocked a shot in and...
Oh, he held and it jumped
held
back?
Held it, jumped back and went in and like turns around to the camera and goes, did you get that on camera? Did you get that on film? You know what I mean? It's just great that like he's got so much energy. He's always laughing and joking. He went in to a press conference and asked Rory a question, didn't he, about how have you been so successful for so long? I just think he's that bit of buzz that you want around the place. There doesn't seem to be an ego there, even though he could quite well have an ego because of how talented he is. He just seems to take everything in his stride, and he's very humble in his approach as well. I think he just seems to do, and he's a fan favourite for me. I want him to do wonders this year.
It's funny, Rory, like that, going back to that question, I think we mentioned it last year, but like Rory was like, I didn't have as much early success as you.
Yeah.
it's almost like he's asked that question to get that answer. So it's like, it's a nice little, like, you're getting someone else to boost your ego for you.
Yeah, definitely.
He is a belter. I'm starting to like him more and more every time you see him do mad things, up to third now in the FedEx already.
Well, that's it. Yeah, the top five finish there. He just always seems to be competing. So
he's top 15 in the world.
Well, that's what I mean. Yeah, so he's going to be playing his first Masters this year as well. So you think of what he's done so far this year. He's never played at Augusta in the Masters.
Crazy, isn't it?
So this is sort of, it's exciting to see how he's going to do this season. And fair, playing a full season against the best players in the world. Are we going to see like a new superstar emerge?
Well, if he won this week, he'd probably go into the world, into the top 10.
With the way the world ranking system works at the moment, I couldn't tell you, but you would expect, wouldn't you?
Well, yeah, then if he wins this week, he'll definitely leapfrog Jordan Spieth, who's 14th in the world. And like for him to be a better ranked player than Jordan Spieth in such a short period of time, it's absolutely insane.
It is, considering the rise Spieth's had since his fall.
That is insane.
He's been phenomenal. And well, Spieth's obviously one of the headline names this week as well, like we mentioned, but a couple of sponsors exemptions as well. Two former world number ones in Tiger Semikawa. Semikawa won back-to-back starts in the Japan Tour last year before turning pro.
He's only won world number one.
amateur world number one.
Oh my word. When you said Tiger, I was thinking, where's Tiger playing?
Tiger. Oh, T-A-I-G-A, Tiger, is it?
You just said then, former world number one, Tiger. Like, I was like, what?
Misleading alert.
What is going on there?
Yeah. So, yeah, he's he won back-to-back starts on the Japan Tour as an amateur, didn't he, before turning pro. He's teeing up, so it'll be interesting to see. And Keita Nakajima, who held the Japanese, who held world number one amateur for so long. He's turned pro now. He's got a sponsor's exemption. And then we mentioned before about players who'd earned a card and doing well. Cole Hamer, he was the former world number one amateur.
Yeah.
He finished top 10 at the RSM Classic this season, which was the final full fielded event of 2022. Because he finished top 10, he then gets a place in the Sony as well. So
nice.
Be interesting to see how he progresses. And then the only other mention for the Sony is Gary Woodland making his first event of the year, and he's got a new equipment deal with Cobra. So this will be his first outing with his new equipment. So it'll be interesting to see how he progresses this week and this season with some new gear in the bag.
One of my ones to keep an eye on, my favourite for the week, obviously, besides Tom Kim, because he's obviously the favourite, is Taylor Montgomery. Like, he's made six top 20 finishes in his last seven events, and he's made all seven cuts during the fall season. So, like we were just talking about, the amount of money that he's, that 1.4 million, it hasn't been.
He's earned the most, yeah, of the top. He finished fifth in Corn Ferry last year, and he's earned the most, 1.4 million by quite some margin.
And he's already 11th on the FedEx Cup standards. That's given him a massive springboard to sort of hang on and keep like that 125 easily, like he should do goes forward. Like, I think he's going to be looking for his first win very, very shortly.
Yeah, out of the 50 players, that got the card through Corn Ferry Finals or Corn Ferry rankings last year, he's earned the most money, 1.4 million. Yeah,
exactly.
Thomas Detchy's got 1.2, who's just behind him, but yeah.
So that's really who I think.
Who are you backing to win this week then?
Well, that's it. Taylor Montgomery.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going for him, yeah.
I'm going Tom Kim.
Yeah.
Thomas the Tank. Right, Hero Cup then.
Hero Cup, a little mini
Ryder Cup, getting us excited and ready.
Do you think it's been introduced to the schedule because of the whooping? Oh, to be like, get together, slap, 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 practice,
a bit of everything,
each other, know each other, do something.
A bit of everything. It was a passing of the tide, wasn't it? Is that the right terminology?
What, from the Seve?
No, not that. From Poulter, Westwood, Garcia, Stenson, all these guys moving on. Paul Casey, the older generation who were pretty much guaranteed, weren't they, and played in the last God knows how many Ryder Cups, and we've got memories to last a lifetime with.
They've all gone to live.
They've all gone to live now, haven't they, and moved on. So we know that no matter what, they're more or less guaranteed not to be playing the Ryder Cup this year.
Yeah, 100%.
So I think this gives, because there's so much uncertainty about who is going to get in the team next year, because you haven't got those guaranteed. You've got the guaranteed names such as, like, you know, your Tommy, your Shane Lowry,
Rory,
Fitzpatrick, Rory, Hatton,
Hovland,
yeah, like they're your guaranteed names. But it's interesting if you look at the other players in there. You know, you've got, if we look at GB and Ireland team, you've got Ewan Ferguson, Robert McIntyre, Seamus Power, Callum Shinquin, Jordan Smith, Matt Wallace and Richard Mansell. And then of the Team Europe, you've got Detry, Rasmus Højgaard, no Nikolai, I don't know what's
Mironk.
Happened. Mironk, Migliozzi, Alex Norren, Perez, yeah, Sepp Straka, Thomas Peters, Antoine Rosner. I think it's Callum Tarran had a good end of last season, didn't he? I think he'll be disappointed not to get.
It's a bit more than that, isn't it? I think you need a bit more than a good end of the season to be playing in this.
Yeah, like most, right.
Every single one of them's got a win.
Apart from Mansell. Yeah.
And well, most of them won last. Jordan Smith won last year. Well, Matt Wallace didn't. Shinquin won last year. Power won last year. McIntyre won last year. Did Lowry win last year?
Ewan won twice.
Lowry, and he open champ. Tommy won last year. Hatton.
And Tommy's not playing, is he?
Well, he's captain, isn't he?
Yeah. Mollywood back on our screens, eh, as rivals. I wonder how that's going to go down.
See, that's a weird one for me, that.
The two pally.
What?
It's going to be played in good spirits, though, isn't it? I think the whole idea of this
is... So the captains aren't playing?
No.
Right.
No.
But I don't understand that again, because like, you want Tommy playing, don't you? You want Tommy involved in the team.
Are they playing?
I don't know. I thought they was until you said they weren't.
Yeah, they're playing.
Yeah.
They are playing, yeah.
Right. Well, that makes just perfect sense then. Sounds about your bum steer you sent me on there.
I just assume non-playing captains because of the Ryder Cup. I didn't even look, but yeah, they are playing 1,000,000%. Yeah, 20 players, so 9, and then 9 plus 1 is 10. Is that right? That's right, isn't it?
9, 10, yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to say, that makes more sense then, because you want to see Tommy playing in a team environment. Like, really, yeah. Like what you'd want to see is Tommy Lowry and Hatton coming out with all the most points earned, best pairings and all that. But hopefully they do it like Mansell and Hatton, or like, you know what I mean? Like,
an experience with this. Yeah. I think, without a doubt, Ewan Ferguson and Robert McIntyre are going to team up.
Yeah, because the Scottish boys, aren't they? Like,
well, yeah, they grew up playing in the Scottish international team together. Good friends growing up, weren't they? So,
yeah,
I think, you know, Callum Shinquin and, but I think you're right, yeah, them two together, and then Hatton, Lowry and Tommy will make up the other three teams, because there'll be four teams, won't there?
Yeah.
To go with the likes of Callum Shinquin, Jordan Smith and Seamus Richard
Power.
Mansell.
Even put Power and Lowry together as like a little Irish one. It's like, you've got loads of boss little teams you can sort of make, isn't it?
Yeah. I think that obviously the GB and Ireland team is much stronger, isn't it, than Team Europe when you look at the credentials there.
Still though, like, you've got obviously a major champion in with the captain. You've got
Thomas Dietrich's had a great start to the season.
Dietrich's had a great start. Rasmus has won. Yeah. Maronk's won. Norrin's a vet. Perez has won. Peters has won. Had a great finish. Strachan won. PJ Tour. Maronk has won.
Nigliozzi won, yeah. And
Nigliozzi as well.
Rosner won the last event out, didn't he? Yeah. That's where he got
so
the
pick. It's like, I think there's only one. There's only you and, I mean, Mansell that hasn't won in it on the whole two teams.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's a pretty, very, very, very strong looking team.
If you look at that, if you, let's say we've got the 8 that we mentioned before,
yeah,
guaranteed in the Ryder Cup, even if they don't qualify, the likelihood is they're going to get picked,
yeah,
just because of their experience and the type of people they are. So who are the, out of all of those there, who are the four right now that you would put forward from those, what is it, another 16 players or whatever?
Yeah.
Who are the four that you would pick?
I'd put Thomas Peters, Rasmus Højgaard, Thomas Dietrich, and Seamus Power. They'd be my four.
Would they?
Yeah.
I wouldn't they?
Who would you put?
Rasmus Højgaard.
Yeah.
Sepp Straka. Ewan Ferguson. Robert McIntyre.
Nice.
It's a tough one, isn't it?
It is. Because they're all very the same. Someone needs to break. Like, I know Ewan's won twice. I'm not taking this other win away from him, but it's like that other one, that the ISPS Handa. It's not as a big of a, as an event, was it? Like, it was like a dual event and all that. Like, it wasn't a star-studded one, was it?
No, you're right. Yeah.
Which is still a win, but you can't take it away from him.
Yeah, it is a tough one, isn't it? Because, you know, you look at all them players. Because
even Norrin, what about Norrin? Like, you know,
Jordan Smith had such a good season last season. He could have won 4 or 5.
He won it. Did he won the?
I know. Yeah,
30 under something. Portugal.
Could have won 4 or 5. Though,
oh,
yeah.
Easy. Yeah.
You know, he was up there a lot. Even
Perez,
Mansell could have had 2 or 3 wins last season.
I can't believe you're not picking Migliozzi and Rosner. They were your two Ryder Cup contenders all last year. That's all you kept saying.
I think Migliozzi, obviously, off his win at the back end of last season, with it being in Italy, there's the added motivation of him going home, isn't there, and doing it in front of the home fans. So, you know, you can never count him out, because one thing Migliozzi will get is the fans behind him.
Yeah.
Because he's from the country. If you had, like, if
and
you
that
had
can also work the way where it's too much pressure.
But if you had Migliozzi and Francesco Molinari paired up on day one, going out first in Italy in the Ryder Cup, the fans would be absolutely buzzing for that.
Yeah, to go after bananas with
me. So, you know, there's that element to it as well. So it's something I'm looking forward to, as I say. There was a similar thing, the Seve Trophy, weren't there?
Yeah. Well, this is basically redone, isn't it?
Yeah. 2013, that stopped. So it's 10 years since that had stopped. Obviously, they've renamed it now. A bit of controversy, weren't there, about that? Dropping the Seve Trophy name, which, you know.
I think it was just his family kicking up a fuss, wasn't it?
Yeah. It was, you know, they should have kept with the name, shouldn't they, really? Yeah. Could have done Seve Trophy by Hero or something like that. Yeah. Hero was the sponsor, wasn't it? So that's probably what's happened. Or whether they're going for a completely new...
If you're Hero, you're half get more respect, don't you, by stepping aside and keeping the Seve and making a deal out of it?
Yeah, putting your logo and everything there, but then making...
Like they appear on Trophy, but you call it the Seve Trophy by a Hero.
Yeah.
And it's like, go on, Seve, have that, lad.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, keeps his additions, yeah. So there was a bit of uproar about it, but, you know, it is what it is. The Cup's going to be contested over 3 days, as we know, Friday to Sunday. The session on the Friday is going to be foursomes. The session on the Saturday is going to be four ball. And then the session on Sunday is going to be singles, where everyone plays. All 20 players are going to take part in each session.
Oh, so there's just three sessions, not like a morning and afternoon like the Ryder Cup?
No, because all 20 are going to take part in each session. So there's going to be five teams.
All right.
So there'll be five teams to play foursomes, five teams to play four ball, and then 10 matches, so 20 points in total.
So are they keeping the teams or do they swap them?
They'll swap them, won't they? So it'll be day one, there'll be teams for the foursomes. Day two, they'll swap them for the four ball, and then they'll have 10 singles matches. So 20 points on offer in total. Obviously, nice. 10 and a half gets you the win.
Nice.
So to look good forward little, to. Yeah. Who do you think's going to win?
I'd say GB and Ireland if I had to, because I was going to call, and I know we're going to do this next week on the segment of when we pit to our picks and get everything up and running, a year-long thing to the end of who's going to win. And I believe Tommy's going to have a stormer of a season this year, you know, majors the lot.
Yeah, he's moved out to Dubai, he's settled now, hasn't he? You can see he's constantly practicing, he's got his family and his kid around him a lot more. Because obviously they're traveling
this
back
one's
and
gonna
forth.
Go down the middle.
Brilliant, that one. See what the DP World Tour done.
They put
that
the
as
same
well
one on
for all of his shots. Brilliant, great. That one. Yeah, no, I agree. I think if there's ever a time for Tommy to do it, he's matured enough now. Anything
that little win at the end of last season, like if he didn't get that, you don't know what he does this summer. But like now, yeah. I've just got a real, real good feeling about Tommy this year.
Yeah, no, but you know what? Wouldn't love nothing more than to see him win a major, would we?
Not more. I'd like to see him on this podcast like he promised, like, but apart from that.
Maybe one day. Maybe we get too big for him.
Yeah.
Hopefully, one day.
Maybe we are too big for him. That's the problem.
That's it. If he wants to win, you know, proof's in the pudding. Just listen to our birdie before.
That's exactly it.
You know what I mean? But no, it's good to be back.
It is.
Podcast will be out consistently now every week. You know, we've got a lot to come, as we mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, a lot going on. So hopefully you enjoy the ride with us and say we're looking forward to getting out to Saudi. That's going to be unbelievable, isn't it, Kev?
Can't wait for that.
Just enjoy your golf and we'll catch you all next week.
Ciao.
Oh, look at that line, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, boy, is he out of sync.